You're listening to Leading Up with Udemy. This podcast is your guide to developing your skills as an emerging or seasoned leader. I'm Alan Todd, your host and the Vice President of Leadership Development at Udemy. Together, we can work, lead, and live differently to create a better world. I was super excited to have Barbara Kellerman from Harvard University on the podcast this week. I love how Barbara takes a very expansive view of leadership and traces it back through history and teases out some of the most important lessons that have been learned on the topic over millennia.
As if we can learn how to lead by taking a course or attending a workshop or being part of an executive program. You know, the old timers, the Aristotles and Socrates and the Platos and the Machiavellis of this world, they understood that learning how to lead takes a lifetime.
This week, I'm speaking with legendary leadership expert and author Barbara Kellerman. Dr. Kellerman is a fellow at the Harvard Kennedy School's Center for Public Leadership, where she was the founding executive director. Kellerman was co-founder of the International Leadership Association and is the author and editor of many leadership books. She does interviews on PBS, CNN, NPR, the BBC. She's written for the New York Times, the Washington Post, and Harvard Business Review, among others. Her research and writing on world leaders and what they can teach us has resulted in over 20 books on the subject of leadership. Her latest book, Leadership From Bad to Worse, is out now. Barbara, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Alan. Good to be with you.
Thanks so much for joining us. I've really been looking forward to this and have studied a lot of your work, and we've had a lot of leadership thinkers on the podcast. But I wanted to start with you. You have three advanced degrees in political science from Yale. How did you go from researching politics and Russia to fall into the study of leadership?
Yeah, it's a great question, Alan. I haven't often been asked that question. So when I was at Yale, I actually developed an interest in leadership even then. And I was stunned at the time to find that there wasn't much of a literature on it. So who knew that in the late 70s, 80s, and 90s, there would develop something, and you are a product, and this show is a product of that, that I have come to call the leadership industry, which is a multi-billion dollar enterprise, most of it consisting of people who are trainers, leadership developers, teaching people how to lead. My interest in leadership, political leadership, corporate leadership, religious leadership, educational leadership across the board is actually somewhat different. And as I tell my students and my audiences, I do not teach them how to lead. I do teach, I do speak, I do write about leadership.
Yeah. Barbara, I'm wondering, because of your background, is there a difference between political leadership and business leadership that you see?
Alan, the answer is essentially yes, and the answer is essentially no. In the study of leadership, because human beings are not widgets, it's often important to keep in mind two apparently contradictory things. Bottom line, on this particular question, there are many, many, many things that political leaders and corporate leaders do have in common, just like there are many things that leaders in China and leaders in the United States, they also have many things in common. Having said that, are there contextual differences, stylistic differences between leaders in China and leaders in the United States and between leaders in the corporate sector and leaders in the political sector? Absolutely. But it's what makes leadership so endlessly interesting a subject to study and endlessly interesting a subject to consider how to. How do I lead? How do I manage? Understanding the complexities. Anybody who tries to simplify this is, in my view, making a considerable mistake.
Well, we live in a world of reductionism, and I think the entire leadership industry, as you've pointed out, has been reductionist on this topic. There's seven habits and six of these and four of those. But I want to pick up on something. You said something to the effect of you like to avoid like the plague definitions of leadership. There's 1,500 definitions, 40 theories of leadership. Can you like the plague. Can you define leadership or give us some sense?
Well, you're really putting me on the spot, Alan. So let me begin with a general comment, and then I will give you what you're asking for, recognizing that lots of people will disagree with me. So the first thing to say is that leadership and management, those words are often, and in fact, most of the time, conflated. People write about them as if they're one and the same and as if they're interchangeable. But in fact, there's a sizable literature that says they mean quite different things. And so bearing that in mind, I will set aside the manager for now and simply talk about my definition of the word leader. So it is A, let's say I'm the leader, I'm A, and you, Alan, are B. If I can get you, B, you, Alan, to do what I want you to do when I want you to do it, I am leading and you are following. It's a very instrumental definition of leadership. It has not the word implicitly good in front of it. I literally look at it as purely a power relationship, less about influence, less about authority. Again, if I can get you, Alan, to do what I want you to do, for that moment at least, I am the leader and you are the follower.
You unpack that a little further because you also talk about A gets B to do what A wants using authority or using power or using coercion, other things other than influence. So I assume the definition you just gave, you mean through voluntary influence.
Well, I'm going to give you three triads. You haven't asked for this, Alan, but I'm going to give them to you anyway.
It's like the next up question, because at some point we need to talk about your framework.
Exactly. So the first of the three triads is, and I will get back to your question, I promise.
Okay.
The first of the three triads is that leadership is not about an individual. It's about a system. What does the system consist of? Three parts, each of which is of equal importance. First part, the leader, very important. I'm not dismissing the leader as important. Second part are the followers, of equal importance. Leadership is a relationship. You cannot have a leader who does not have at least one follower. So of equal importance, the followers. And the third part of this triad is the context, or better, plural. So if in your audience there are young would-be leaders and young would-be managers, I can only advise you all, do not think only of yourselves. Do not focus solely on self-improvement, how to decide better and how to communicate better. Because again, leadership is a system with three equal parts: leaders, followers, and contexts. Now, my second triad, which brings me to your question. So, Alan, I think of leaders as having three resources. The first one is, as I indicated earlier, power. The second one is authority, which is related to power, but is by no means the same. And the third one is the word that you just mentioned, which is influence. Again, they're all related, but they are also very, very different.
Yeah. So putting all of that together, one of the things that I've thought about from your work, connecting back to the leadership industry context, the leadership development industry, so much doesn't transfer. We learn these things and we make the assumption that they work in any context, and we teach a set of skills, and then you switch context and it doesn't work at all. Can you talk about context and why it's so important, and why is it so confounding?
Well, I'm so glad you raised the question, Alan, because it's one of my, I have to say, several complaints about the leadership industry. And I just want to go back to a point you made earlier. I could not agree with you more about it all being reductionistic.
Yeah.
As if we can learn how to lead by taking a course or attending a workshop or being part of an executive program. You know, the old timers, the Aristotles and Socrates and the Platos and the Machiavellis of this world, they understood that learning to lead, and by the way, the American military does too. That's a sort of separate conversation. But most people do not, and most organizations do not, and most institutions of higher education, including business schools, do not, in my view, understand that learning how to lead takes a lifetime. So it is a reductionist enterprise, and I regret that so few of my colleagues are willing to look at the complexities of learning how to lead. And context, as you suggest, is of primary importance. I said earlier that whether you're a leader in China or in the United States, there are some similarities. But as you are implying, the contextual differences are profound. And the contextual differences are also profound if you're leading at the Ford Motor Company or you're leading at Microsoft. So to act or to pretend that you can teach how to lead without drumming into people the importance of contexts, plural, including the moment in time. It's different leading in 2024 as it was five, not to speak of 50 years ago. And it will be different leading 5 years from now.
I have so much more to go on about bad leaders and followers. We'll get to those. But you were mentioning it's a lifetime journey. And I love that. And I subscribe to that theory. I like the way you went all the way back to Confucius and Plato and said that, you know, if you looked at their version of a leader, it was so deeply rooted in being highly educated and wise. And that didn't come easy. It came over years, decades, a lifetime of struggle. That's the way you described the origins of thinking about leaders, the philosopher king, etc.
Yes, I do. And I actually, one of my books is, it's actually not mine. I can say that in a way it's my favorite because it's not mine, meaning it's a collection of what I call the great leadership literature, the seminal leadership literature. It's called Leadership Essential Selections. And there are short excerpts in that book from Plato and from Confucius and from Machiavelli with introductions by me. And they indicate very clearly how to learn to lead, which is, as you very much say, not quick and easy. You know, there's something in the American culture where we assume everything can be done rapidly, swiftly, simply, but swiftly and simply does not work when you want to be a good leader. And I might as well throw in my definition of good and bad here, which is good leadership consists of leadership that is simultaneously ethical and effective. And bad leadership consists of leadership that is either ineffective or unethical, or of course, in some unhappy cases, both. But all these early great teachers of leadership, they all saw themselves this way as teachers of leaders, sages, wise. Plato, for example, said you can't really learn how to lead until you're about 50. And that did include very much being educated in every sphere known at that time to humankind.
The buzz around Gen AI isn't going anywhere. Leaders and managers are key to identifying how their companies can use the technology and creating a plan to grow their employees' skills. Learn how Udemy can help at business.udemy.com/GenAI now. Let's talk about bad leadership for a second. So I'm going to just throw out some stats. And by the way, I could throw these out for 2 hours, but instead I'm going to throw them out for 30 seconds. Recent study by Society of Human Resource Management, 60% of people say their job is their number one factor in their mental health. It's a greater factor than their doctor or their therapist, an equal contributing factor to their spouse. And 75% said stress at work has a negative impact on their home life. Gallup says 70% of the variance in employee engagement they define as the role of the leader. So 70% of this variance, and that most leaders are promoted into leadership positions for the wrong reasons, and they have little or no professional development, leaving employee engagement today at 30-year lows. So I think bad leaders, when we look at it in the workplace with stress, and you look at the counts of stress and depression and mental anxiety and how that contributes to heart disease and cancer, my summary is bad leaders are killing us. And that's the crisis of the moment. So I'm curious what you think about the state of leadership in the workplace today.
Well, I find those statistics as fascinating as depressing. And by the way, we see similar syndromes in the political sphere, meaning people tend to distrust their leaders, to dislike their leaders, to be dissatisfied. And I always find it a curiosity that if you think, as I do, of the leadership industry being about a half century old. During these 50 years, instead of leaders being more admired and more liked and more assessed as doing well, you find those trajectories going down. So we all know, most of us do anyway, what it's like to be in the workplace and work for a bad boss. We also know how helpless we feel. We similarly know, and this is my latest book, Leadership from Bad to Worse is the title, unless bad leaders and managers are stopped, and by the way, it's much easier to stop them early in their trajectories, unless they are stopped, they don't stay the same. They become more of what they are. We see it in the workplace. We see it in the body politic. We have two men running now for president of the United States. Whatever you may think of them, one is in his late 70s and the other in his early 80s, both Joe Biden and Donald Trump, they are more of what they were 4 or 8 years ago. So if you didn't like Donald Trump 5, 7 years ago, you're going to like him even less now because he's become more extreme in his views and behaviors. Interestingly, the same thing could be said about Joe Biden. And again, managers in the workplace, as you implied, Alan, unless they are stopped, if they are bad, they will get worse. The trouble is that their subordinates, their employees, people who report to them, what I call followers for the sake of simplicity, because it's the obvious antonym opposite of leader, their followers typically don't know what to do. They feel caught, trapped between a rock and a hard place with a bad manager.
Yeah. And so let's talk about what we can do. So do you have advice on discerning who are good or bad leaders in an organization? How do you harness that power of followership or discern or decide what to do?
Yeah. So interestingly, I do have some simple steps, if that's the right word, what to do at the end of the book. But I want to begin, before I list some of those steps, I want to begin by saying, especially if you need your job, I do not for one moment want to make it seem easy to avoid a bad leader, not to speak of upending a bad leader. But I guess I would start by saying the first thing to bear in mind is what I call consciousness raising. I wish that, you know, as well as I do, Alan, that there are many thousands of leadership courses out there. I wish there would be followership courses out there to teach people to understand intellectually as well as viscerally that there are things that they can do. And the first one is consciousness raising. Being aware that in case you are an activist, you either might be able to join a union or you might start a union. I think it's fascinating, for example, that Dartmouth, at the undergraduate level, Dartmouth just has agreed with the basketball team. Yeah. These are undergraduates that they're allowed to unionize.
Yep.
So what had to happen before these basketball players understood that they could unionize? They had to have their consciousness raised. They had to understand the possibility of such a thing before they could work to labor for it. And I would say the same thing in the workplace. Step one is have your consciousness raised. Be aware that though you may feel powerless or you may appear powerless, you are almost certainly not. Having said that, though, Alan, I think people like you and I need to bear in mind that leaders have a much harder time now leading than they used to, because followers are much, we probably won't have time to get into this, but there's a, you know, an argument can be made that the reason autocracies such as Russia and China, to take the most obvious examples, are far more oppressive now than they were 10 years ago, is because the likes of Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping understand full well that unless they clamp down harder, their followers, their people, would become that much more resistant. In other words, leaders in liberal democracies are actually faced with followers, with constituents, with voters, whatever you want to call them, who are in many ways much more restive than they used to be. So you have someone like Sean Fain, currently America's most active and prominent union leader, intending to chalk up union gains in 2024 and 2025 that a union leaders 3 years ago or 5 years ago could only have dreamed about. So unionization is on the upswing. I think people have not yet learned how to harness follower power, which is precisely why I wish followership would be taught, how to be a good follower, every bit as much as how to be a good leader.
Wow. And there's no market for followership, right? What happened when you offer a course on followership at Harvard?
Well, it's funny you should ask that question. I did offer such a course, and I can assure you that people do not go to Harvard to learn how to be followers. They learn how to be leaders. You know, I had people, of course, I had students. I didn't have all that many students, but the ones I had were really intellectually curious about, you know, who teaches such a thing.
Yeah.
So I do think people now are somewhat more aware and sympathetic to the importance of the other. That is, who is the leader leading? It's got to be at least one other human being.
Yeah. If you looked forward in the next 20 years, I mean, doesn't it continue to devolve, leader and follower? And if so, what could we do about it now? How should we think about that?
Alan, you're asking the all-important question. I want to reiterate a point I made earlier. By the way, I blog all the time, and I've blogged about this issue, which is that leading is so much harder for the reasons that we're saying. Followers, again, talking in the Western world primarily, not only, but again, in liberal democracies, followers are so much more resistant to being led that, to go back to one of my earlier triads, leaders who depend on their authority or their power to lead are going to be not very successful. I mean, I'm going to use the now famous example of the short-lived president of Harvard University, Claudine Gay, who found that being the president of Harvard University gave her virtually no tool whatsoever. The title was almost meaningless. In the old days, which were not that long ago, 10, 20, 30 years ago, if you were president of Harvard, hardly anybody would dare to speak with you, not to speak of contradicting you.
Right.
And this woman, whatever you thought of her capacities, she did find in short order that her august title was of virtually no currency to her. She was powerless at Harvard after she was powerless in front of Congress. And her authority was worth also virtually nothing. And she was unable to influence. And so she eventually, obviously, was obliged to resign. But it's not just Claudine Gay. Leaders' tenures are shorter. They find it more difficult because instead of relying on power and authority, they usually have to resort to influence. And influencing people, persuading people, is infinitely more difficult than ordering people around. In the old days, a leader could command and control. Nowadays, leaders are much less able to do that. I'm not saying it doesn't exist at all. And therefore, they have to rely on their capacity to persuade and everything that that implies, which, by the way, tends to be somewhat more difficult than for women than it is for men. I think it's not irrelevant to the fact that if you look at corporate America, the total percentage of women CEOs of Fortune 500 companies is only marginally higher than it was 10, 20 years ago.
Yeah. If obedience to authority is diminishing over time and power is devolving, here's another, just I can't make sense of this. I look at the richest people in the world, Elon Musk at Tesla, Jeff Bezos, Amazon, the Apple of Steve Jobs. These are the most valuable companies in the world. And those leaders, they care about great products and great customer service and not on people or leadership. None of them, to me, seem to care if they would ever win a best people, best culture, best leadership award. They don't care. And so is our society, are we rewarding, I think as consumers and followers, are we rewarding the behaviors that we would not want to have ourselves?
Well, such an interesting question. So my first answer is that the Jeff Bezoses and the Elon Musks are unicorns. Not only their companies, but they themselves, they are geniuses of some kind. And I actually would like to extract them from the point that you're making. The point that you're making relates to many different things, including, this is a leader-follower issue, the enormous rise in income inequity. So the numbers of billionaires in the United States is increasing exponentially, whereas wage gains for those at the lower end of the ladder, while they have gone up somewhat in recent years, the gap between what CEOs make and people at the very top of the corporate ladder and what people earn in the middle and at the bottom has never historically been nearly as wide as it is today. Now, does that have implications for leadership and followership? Historically, in the long run, it does. Historically, societies, you know, we go back to the Gilded Age, when the gap between those at the top and those in the middle and at the bottom becomes too wide, historically, followers, those at the bottom, have protested to the point of overturning some in the society. Now, one could argue that some of what we're seeing is reflected in the two candidates who are running for the American presidency. The strongman, Donald Trump, whose strongman type is echoed in many countries around the world, movement to the right of the political spectrum is common in liberal democracies. The United States is not idiosyncratic in that regard. And I don't know about you, but I wouldn't want to have Elon Musk or Donald Trump as my boss. Do they necessarily give a damn about the people who work for them? If they do, there is no evidence of that whatsoever. But again, we're talking about leaders and managers across the board. Just ask Bob Iger, CEO of Disney, how he feels about running a corporation. Interestingly, when he ran it the first time around, he was hailed as a hero. Then he was out for a few years, as I know you know very well, comes back and finds that leading is more challenging, including leading Disney, than it was when he was CEO the first time around. So times change, including leaders' capacity to influence either an activist like Nelson Peltz, who is driving Bob Iger crazy, or indeed people at the company who are more likely to bitch and moan than they would have been 5, 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, I'm with you completely. The thing I'd love to close on would be, is there something that our early career listeners could think about? If we idolize and hero fetishize Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, there's not a day that I could go through media and not read about one of their two names. Just like in the political sense, I wouldn't get a day's break from Donald Trump. The question is, if I'm young and aspiring to greatness, and I'm taught that the role models are people worth $100 billion and great leadership isn't the path. That's the takeaway message. And I'd like to get something from you that's maybe more hopeful or optimistic that we could bring to the masses as a word that says there is another way for us to think about leading and what you might want to aspire for yourself as a young person in the workplace or early career, millennial, Gen Z. Any thoughts on that?
Yes, of course I have thoughts on that, Alan. You know me by now well enough to know I have thoughts on everything that is related to leadership and followership and bad and good.
Yes.
Yes. So I would say that for most of us aspiring to be a Steve Jobs or a Mark Zuckerberg or an Elon Musk is probably not in the cards. As I said earlier, they are truly the exceptions that prove the rule. However, I think most of your young listeners, and I applaud them for that, are listening precisely because they're ambitious and precisely because they're aiming to be leaders and managers. And likely, most of them are also aiming to be good leaders and managers in the sense that I use the word good, as I said earlier, to be both simultaneously reasonably effective and reasonably ethical. So I will end with something that I mentioned earlier. I'll give you yet one more triad. I'll start with one of the triads I mentioned earlier, and then I'll proceed to another. So another book I wrote, and this came out maybe 6 years ago, is called Professionalizing Leadership. So how do I argue we should be teaching leadership? We should teach leaders the way we teach doctors and lawyers and teachers and engineers. What does that involve? It involves, again, a three-step process. Number one, learning about leadership. I call that leadership education. You need to learn about what, for the doctor, the equivalent would be the human body. The first thing a medical student does is to take an anatomy course so that he or she understands the nature of the human body, the construct of the human body. So first step is leadership education. Second step is leadership training. That's where you get the specialized skills in leadership that you think you will most need in the career path that you have chosen. And the last one is leadership development. What do I mean by that? It's something that we said earlier, Alan, which is lifelong learning. Do not think that if you conclude a leadership course or program or seminar or whatever in 2024, that will take you straight through another 5 years, not to speak of another 10, 15, or 20. So three steps in that order, by the way.
Yep.
Leadership education first, leadership training second, leadership development, lifelong learning is third. And the other triad, and this is a repeat of one that I said earlier, if you want to be a good leader and or manager, do not focus only on yourself as the leader or manager. By all means, learn about leadership, educate yourself, get trained, and develop yourself. But equally, focus on those whom you would lead and manage. Who will be your followers? If you're in one company, pay attention to who's around you, to those above you, to those below you. In other words, if you're going to be a leader, who are your followers and what are they like and what do they want and need? And third, again, to pay attention to the contexts, plural, within which you are either leading and managing now or hope to lead and manage in the future. And those contexts change, the temporal context change. 2024 is not going to be like 2027. And so does the context change depending on the company, the group, or the organization within which you are currently employed.
Beautiful. Barbara, that was a perfect closing for the podcast. But I have one more question.
Yes.
What are you curious about and learning now?
Well, I'm sure if you've done any writing, you know that you are always focusing on that last product of yours. So my last products are Leadership from Bad to Worse, the book that just came out recently, a chapter I wrote for a book on women in leadership, which is a nothing like it is out there on women in leadership. So maybe we can have another conversation someday about that.
I would love to do that. That's a big topic for us.
And the third one is that I write about followers all the time. Whenever I write about leaders or speak about leaders, I equally talk about followers, as you've heard. But it's possible that my next major project might be on followers.
I love it. All right, Barbara Kellerman, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
My pleasure. It was great to talk to you.
Thanks again to Barbara Kellerman for joining us on the podcast today. Follow Leading Up, a podcast from Udemy Business, wherever you find your podcast. We'll be back next Wednesday with another episode to help you level up your leadership skills. Follow the show so you never miss a new episode. And if you like the show, leave a rating or a review. We love the feedback, and it really helps us to find new listeners. To learn more about Leading Up or how Udemy can help you develop leaders at scale and move business forward, visit business.udemy.com. The Leading Up podcast is produced in partnership with Pod People. Our original theme is by Soundboard.